RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. So the season of Heroes keeps getting better and better. What do you think?
Yeah, and this episode for sure ramped it up for me, especially with the depressing events of last episode.
It's the level of commitment that I'm seeing from the cast and crew is just amazing here. And it sounds like from the tweets and the Facebook posts and stuff that Stephen Amell is putting out there, that they are having a lot of fun as well, doing the show, teasing the show. You know, they were talking about, I think he was saying he was filming like episode 9 or 10 or something like that, and all the cool stuff that was going on, which I think that's probably one of the episodes right before the winter break. It sounds like we're going to have another week off, or I guess we're going to have a week off coming up at the end of November for Thanksgiving week, and then we come back in December with our Barry Allen episodes, so that should be pretty cool.
Geez, it already seems like it's kind of going by fast.
It does. I mean, this is only the fourth episode, but, you know, it's, you're kind of start looking ahead and you're like, wow, what are they going to get to? But what I'm really interested in is the fact that we are only at the fourth episode, and look at all of the plot points, guest stars, characters that we've gotten so far. If you are a fan of the DC Comics universe, this show is delivering quality material, I think, on all the different characters. And we're going to talk about a specific episode right now, which was, like I said, episode number 4 from this last week. Josh, you want to share that information with everybody?
Well, this episode was titled Crucible.
Crucible.
And we'll talk about what Crucible is. But it originally aired on October 30th of 2013. This episode was written by Andrew Kreisberg and Wendy Miracle. It was directed by, I love this name, Eagle Eglison. Eglison?
Eglison, I think, yeah.
Well, every time I practice, it sounds right, and then I say it on the show, and I mess it up.
So the eagle is delivering us a canary.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
Oh, yeah.
So this is why I count on you to put these things together. It works out great.
I'm trying to think. Well, Eagle, I do not know anyone. I've never heard of anyone named Eagle before.
No, I had a student named Cinnamon once.
Cinnamon.
But not Eagle. No,
okay. Cinnamon. You know, cinnamon is a spice and Eagle is a bird, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I just not related at all. So.
All right.
So anyway, this episode, let me kind of just give you a brief rundown of what happened. But Oliver discovers a guy who goes by the name The Mayor. So anybody that has the in front of their name, you know, is pretty sure of themselves.
But, the Rock. Yeah.
I'm going to start calling myself The Josh.
The Josh.
Does that sound okay?
Yeah, that's cool,
man. Kind of sounds like I'm lying to everybody, though, doesn't it?
you're just a big jokester.
Well, the mayor, he's bringing all these illegal, very dangerous guns into the Glades to try to take over. So Oliver sponsors this Cash for Guns event to help kind of clean up the city, which seems to be working for a while. But unfortunately, the mayor crashes the event and his gang hurts and kills a few people and seriously injures Sin, who we've seen in earlier episodes.
Which is, by the way, just it's not short for cinnamon, which...
It's not short for cinnamon.
It's short for Cindy.
Yeah. Well, I don't think if you had a name like cinnamon, I don't think you'd shorten it. It's already interesting enough, so...
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, you know, the Sin being a friend of the canary is furious when she finds this out. So she's looking for revenge. You know, meanwhile, Felicity, she stuns Oliver with a little bit of information about the canary. We find that out. Donner, the DA, he asks Laurel out to dinner. And Diggle, he reconnects with an old friend that we have seen. And also, in a stunning turn of events, in a flashback to not the island, but the boat coming from the island, Oliver painfully learns of the return of a past acquaintance of his.
Dun, dun, dun!
So, a lot of big reveals, I guess, in this one.
Well, and just when you think the episode's over, they hit you again with a double whammy, and wow, we'll talk about that in a minute here. So,
I have heard so many good things about this episode online and from people I know that watch the show.
Uh-huh.
And you know what I really like is that now people are starting to compare other shows to Arrow.
Really?
And telling, yeah, I've heard people talk about shows and putting them, you know, up against the standards that Arrow has been presenting. So, as a superhero show and as a drama TV mm-hmm. show, and it's really, you know, in the second season, it's definitely established itself as something to watch. And even, you know, it pops up in Entertainment Weekly regularly now, and that's kind of a sign that it's here for a while, you know, and, mm-hmm. and people are going to expect big things from it.
Well, I mean, it's no Breaking Bad, which I think I may have mentioned before, kind of has spoiled hour-long drama shows for me on TV, but that is an aberration. I agree with you, though, as far as like superhero shows go, and as far as, I guess, action-adventure style dramas
I would put
go.
This... Yeah, I would put this more in the action adventure category than the drama. You know, mm-hmm. to me, drama would be more of a Breaking Bad. It's. I don't want to say this show isn't realistic, because it's, you know, they've sort of established it as being a real world kind of superhero thing. But I mean, it's really not real world. Real world to me would be, you know, shows like Law and Order and you know, even
NCIS
Breaking Bad
and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, things like that. So to me, this is more of an action adventure kind of show.
And this does have. A little bit of kind of soap opera quality to it. But, I mean, I think even those other shows that we just mentioned do as well. You know, just the interpersonal relationship, the ongoing elements of the interpersonal relationships and stuff like this. So, but, you know, this is kind of the bar, I think, for any shows that the networks want to put out that, you know, are based on comic books. I mean, these ones we've heard about coming up for next season, like Gotham, which mm-hmm. is going to be a Commissioner Gordon show. There's supposedly Constantine, and there's supposedly three or four other shows that Marvel's shopping around, which are unknown at this point. So it'll be really interesting to see what we get out of those. And then if you go back and look at historical comic book based television shows, I think the Hulk stands alone pretty well because it was less about the Hulk and really more about Bruce Banner or David Banner in that case, and you know, ended up being more of a drama show. Wonder Woman too, but then you get stuff like The Flash, which I remember being really cool, but then I went back and watched an episode over the summer and I was like,
that doesn't
it's kind of cheese ball. So
it was still fun.
Well, I was all excited about hearing about Barry Allen coming to the show. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go watch some Flash. And the bar is set so low, I think they're going to do fine here on Arrow.
I think so too.
So, well, we got a couple news and feedback items here at the start. First off, we neglected to mention I guess it would have been last week we would have been able to find out about this, but might have been even two episodes ago, that Stephen Amell and his wife, Cassandra Jean, had a baby girl from her pregnancy. I was almost going to say from Stephen, but, you know, he got his abs back in shape so quickly after the baby. But had a little baby.
It's all that parkour, you know. It's good.
Little baby, baby girl named Mavi, M-A-V-I. It doesn't appear to be short for anything, but it looks like it could be a derivation of like maybe Mavis or something like that.
I hope not.
No, okay. Sorry to all the people out there named Mavis that Josh
well,
just
I don't know. For a little baby girl, I just don't see a Mavis. Sorry, Mavis. Oh, sorry, Mavis. Sorry out there.
But anyway, she was born on October 15th, and he posted it to Facebook saying, just in time for Amel Wednesdays. So thought that was kind of cool. So congratulations to the both of them. Everybody seems to be doing fine. And then we've got a kind of question here for everybody. Josh and I were talking before the show. Like, we want to mention, you know, the people that listen to the show and that are taking the time to write in. And what do we call those people? And we couldn't figure it out. So what should the fans of the show Arrow be called, or you know, what's their moniker? Like, you know, you've got people who like Star Trek, they're called Trekkies, and, you know, other, you know, Bat fans or something like that for Batman. So what are Arrow or Green Arrow fans called? So go ahead and email us at greenjustice@randomchatter.com if you'd like to weigh in on this topic. And if we get some good ideas, maybe on next week's show, we will give you guys a new term that you can use to call yourself and wear your Arrow badge proudly, your fan badge there. So
yeah, and we need to start spreading this. We want some real creative ideas. I'd love for that name to start trending. That'd be good. Let's come up with a good name.
Well, yeah, that would always be good. That'd be great.
Then we'll spread it around.
So we also got an email from listener Eric about Diggle, and we've talked before how Diggle is a new character created specifically for the Arrow television show, but he said that he wanted to give us a heads up on Jeff Lemire's current run of Green Arrow. He actually put Diggle into the comics starting on issue number 24. So I guess, let's see, Lemire's run started on issue 17, and he wanted to actually start a new, you know, start over with a new number one, but DC didn't want to restart the book after, you know, only a year and a half. So anyway, issue 17, after seven issues, he introduced Diggle into Green Arrow. Eric goes on to say, Lemire loved him so much, he knew he had to put him in the regular DC universe. And then he gave us some links here. There's a link on IGN.com that you can find about John Diggle, and also one on comic book resources. And then he also reminded us that the whole first season of Arrow is in HD on Netflix. So if anyone out there has missed something, or you want to go back and look at some interesting things in season one, that we're going to talk about a couple of those. I actually went back and looked at two episodes due to Crucible that they kind of forced me to do that. So Eric in Michigan, thank you very much for writing in and letting us know all about John Diggle in the Arrow, in the Green Arrow comics. And then also, listener David, who we had a letter from last week, he also wrote in again and pointed out to us that Donner, who is the DA, and he appears again in this episode, is also a possible reference to Superman director Richard Donner, which I don't think either you or I had pointed that out in a previous episode.
I was thinking it was one of the reindeer from Santa's sleigh, but this sounds probably a little bit more likely.
That, you know, yeah, I'm going to go with the Superman reference.
Yeah, okay, that is cooler. So
okay, all right. Well, you ready to get started talking about Crucible?
Absolutely.
All right. So the biggest thing I guess we can talk about in this episode is the fact that Sarah's back, and Sarah's front, and oh my gosh, she. That is the worst, really, you know, costume for like a superhero to wear. She's busting out all over. But the fact that there are a couple things I got to get out of the way first about the whole just kind of canary Sarah in the canary costume, or well, we're calling it a canary costume. She doesn't really have a superhero name, right? She's just the woman in black, I guess, right? Like we talked about.
Yeah, they haven't. That's all they've called her so far, I think.
Right. Okay. Two things I just kind of I got to point out here that are just seemingly ridiculous. One is, the canary is blonde, and in the comic books, Black Canary has a blonde wig that she wears, and under it she is a brunette or has black hair, I guess, depending on the depiction, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dark hair. She has dark hair.
She has dark hair, right. And then in the Canary persona, she's got this really fine blonde hair. Well, in Arrow, she's wearing a blonde wig. Oliver pulls it off, and she's got blonde hair underneath. It's like, wow, that's an amazing disguise, the fact that you would disguise your blonde hair with a blonde wig. So I think
that's a little blonder.
Her Canary wig is like platinum blonde, and she's kind of a dirty blonde, maybe a strawberry blonde even. But the hair color for the, I'm going to say, the original Sarah, and if you guys want to see what I'm talking about, go back and watch the pilot again. There's an entirely different actress playing Sarah in that. You can see photo comparisons I put up on our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast. And there are four
That's
images.
An even better place to look.
What's
go to our Facebook page first. Go to our Facebook page first, and then you can go back and watch the episode.
Okay, but, yeah.
So that's a good place to compare.
And then what's up with Canary's mouth? Did you notice this through the episode?
And now I didn't really pay much attention until you had said something. So
I wasn't looking at her mouth. yeah, she's like,
she had a mouth.
Whenever they do a close up, it's like she had something on her teeth or she was chewing gum or something. She kept kind of pursing her lips forward like she was trying to pucker, and like she'd smile and I'd see, okay, her mouth can actually go to full range on the sides. And then it would kind of come forward in this weird little pucker thing. And I noticed it a lot in the close-ups, and I'm sorry to actress Katie Lotz if this is just how her mouth works, but it was just kind of distracting.
I was thinking it was kind of a pouty brooding kind of mouth. Like, you know, she was kind of sticking it. I'm not sure. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, but it probably will now. But
and saying, you know, that it bothered me is, you know, is probably an overstatement too. But you know, and it seemed like maybe she was trying to play the whole thing as she's just real kind of terse and tense about being back in town, and you know, angry but a little perturbed, and just
that was how I took it. And my guess would be, and who knows, but my guess would be that the director, Eagle, yeah. Eagle told her, he said, you know, we need to see your emotions here. And she's got that mask that covers her eyes and her eyebrows. And so I would guess that, you know, that's part of the way she expresses herself. Was she doing it without the mask too? Was she doing it when she was just talking as Sarah?
Yeah, there was one, I think it was in the scene outside Verdant, or when she came to Ollie at Verdant. So I guess she would have come inside there, but I think in that sequence there was, I don't think it bothered me so much when she was wearing the hat at the end in the hospital, but, yeah, I don't know. You'd go back and take a look at it again if you guys didn't notice it. And of course, now that I've said it, it's like that episode of Friends, How I Met Your Mother, where somebody points out somebody's flaw and all of a sudden everybody can see it, like Robin chews loud or Lily chews too loud or something like that. And then
well, I tell you what, if the biggest thing I have to worry about is staring at her mouth every once in a while in an episode, I guess there's a lot worse things. So
yeah, that's so true.
But, you know, so far she's doing a pretty good job of the character. Mm-hmm. They haven't done too much other than just this kind of, you know, brooding return of her. So I'm interested in seeing where else they go with her. And I hope it's not too, I don't know if this is exactly what I mean, but I hope it's not too caricaturized of that kind of personality.
Right. Well, I mean, there's definitely, she's got a lot of angst going for her. And the big question right now is, why is she back all of a sudden? I mean, she says why she's back in the fact that she started hearing about this vigilante like a year ago. And so then she decided to show up. But I think there's more to it because we know from, I believe it was last week's episode, that some people from the League of Assassins are looking for her. So, And surprisingly enough, the next episode's title is, skip over this if you guys don't want to hear this, but it's called League of Assassins.
So, what? Oh, spoiler alert.
Oh, did I just spoil it for everybody?
Maybe it's not what we think it is. Although based on the preview, I would say it probably is.
Well, it's not a bunch of people sitting around crocheting hoods, I can tell you that.
So. No, they did that before the episode because they're all wearing them after that. So do you have speculations on why you think she returned now in particular, or are you just kind of going with what they said? What do you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've always got like speculations and stuff, but well, thanks for asking, Josh.
Was that a good segue?
I think she, she was in with the League of Assassins. Obviously, there's a huge amount about her backstory that we didn't know, and then this episode tacked on a whole nother element to it that we didn't know, which was the fact that Oliver knew she was alive, and Oliver has seen her during his time on the island, which we were under the assumption, along with Laurel and Quentin, that, well, and the mom too, Dinah, that
everybody,
Sarah died. Well, yeah, basically everybody, that Sarah died because, that's the last thing that we saw. Oliver was on an island for 5 years, and then he comes back, and then, oh, yeah, Sarah's dead. Everyone's like, oh, Sarah's dead. Oh, wait, no, I think I saw her in a photo. No, I'm sorry. It's just my friend, says Laurel. It's someone I know, or somehow she knew this person, and it was not the sister, but it was someone that kind of looked like the sister, which is true. It looked like the actress that originally played the sister, both which were brunettes, neither of which look like the actress playing Sarah now, Katie Lotz. And then the fact that Oliver reveals that Sarah was actually on this boat that he is on just off the island. So they both went into the water. She disappeared for a year. He was on the island being trained by Yao Fei and Shadow and Slade. And then she was somewhere else, possibly with this Russian, this tanker crew, which includes some Russian prisoners as well as a Haitian captain, I guess.
We think he's the captain. He seems like it, but
he seems to be the captain. Yeah, at least I don't. Yeah, no, I don't know that he referred to himself as the captain. Anyway, let's assume he's the captain because he's kind of the one in charge at this point. And then she's on board with them, so. And she got training from somewhere. She's run away from the League of Assassins, as near as we can tell. She's picked up this girl, Sin, saved her from something, and rescued her. So it's very similar to what happened in the comic books. And then she heard about the vigilante, so she came to Starling City. I believe that she's on the run, and she thinks that maybe Oliver can help her in some way because she's obviously figured out that Oliver is the archer, the hooded, vigilante here. And
you think she wants his help, or
yeah, I
she
think
she couldn't resist telling him. Or I didn't think about that. I guess maybe what?
Well, he is probably the only one that she can tell that she's alive, right? She came back to at least see her family, but she doesn't want to reveal anything to them. Probably because of the pains in her past. She's obviously, she's as messed up as Oliver is.
Or more.
She's kind of at the point where he was a season ago, right? She hasn't discovered the healing of, the catharsis that comes with being a vigilante, I guess, or whatever, and making the run on that. But she is, I think Oliver...
I'm sorry, all I picture is like vigilante therapy now. Yeah. He's going to start bringing people in that have issues, and they work through it by, beating people up and first killing them and then learning not to.
Yeah. Well, as long as he's not shooting them in the side or the gut or whatever to make him feel pain. But if you look back to the Huntress arc from last season, where he was all gung-ho to have this partner, and then he realized, oh, wait a second, you know, maybe I'm not the best person to do the training. You know, he had some issues with that. So now he's got someone who, you know, is kind of already trained. You know, they do a little fighting together this episode, which some great stuff I thought going on, them switching weapons up and everything like
that.
That was a nice little fan moment there. But, yeah, I think that, you know, he's someone that knows her from before, and she feels like she can confide in him and that he may have whatever it takes to help her stop the people that are after her, et cetera, you know, something like that.
Okay.
Had you put any thought into that, or were you just...
Well, I hadn't originally thought of her coming back to have him help her, but I did have some thought on, you know, how she got where she was. And I don't know, but it just seems to kind of fit with, you know, her becoming a Black Canary but the reason I think she came back, it seems as if maybe, once she heard about the quake and, then maybe started worrying about her family, at least her father, you know, and Laurel, she didn't seem too concerned about her mother. I don't, you know, I'm not even sure she knows where her mother is, but,
yeah.
But I think maybe that whoever she was with, and it could have been, you know, the League of Assassins, that's what it seems like, but wouldn't let her come back and check or wouldn't let her do that. So that's why she left. But now she's got this problem that they're coming back to get her.
She does also mention that, I guess she was concerned that she didn't put it in so many words, but she was definitely worried that Oliver was going to tell somebody about her. So up until this point, right, he's always been saying she's been dead, which is fine because that's what we as the audience believe. But now that you realize that she's actually alive, it means, he knew that she was alive at least 1 year into his island stay. So, you know, 4 years prior to his rescue, he had seen her after the boat crashed, but he was telling everyone she died on the boat. And, you know, obviously we're going to find out more this season on the, I guess we can't call it the island storyline anymore. We'll call it the boat storyline, right? Does that sound good?
I think it's still the island storyline because that's where it originated. But
okay.
Plus it sounds like they go back.
Well, yeah, he's going to have to get, he's rescued from the island, so he will be back somehow. And we, like I said, in the premiere of season two, we see that tanker boat broken into, sitting in the harbor of the island. So
do we know that's the same one? Does it say Mazo on it?
No, because it's facing, we're looking at the bow instead of the stern.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else it would be.
Yeah. I mean, like how many of these boats are, you know,
the Mazo too. Anyway, so what? But also, he did say, didn't he say something about her, about Sarah being on the island, either to her or because she said, where's Slade?
Yes.
What happened to Slade?
Right. So she knows Slade, which is cool, which means that Slade is not dead, but Shadow might be. But I don't think she is either. I think Shadow will still be around because she was – I think she was captured and she's in one of the other pens somewhere. And I think they've got Slade there.
Well, and I also – they have to go back – well, I know they don't have to. But I would guess that they go back to the island because the guys on the boat, that Haitian there, he is – they're looking for something on the island. They're looking for the
tombs, bodies. The bones, the bodies.
Yeah, the graves. So
I keep waiting for Christopher Lloyd to run in. It's like – say, Oliver, we got to go back. So.
Jeez, Doc, we just left.
Well, this is a very complicated storyline, but I didn't see her coming back for Oliver's help. I saw her coming back for a different reason, which seemingly is her family, and then just naturally because of the trouble that caused that she left. Mm-hmm. The League of Assassins, it sounds like, she'll naturally get Oliver's help. So, because she told him that she knew it was him the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
when she heard about him.
Shoot. I mean, he's running around with an arrow on the island and a green hood.
Well, yeah.
I mean, And from Starling City, it's like, duh.
What kind of a detective does that tell you about? What, I mean, Officer Lance there, he can't figure it out. He's hanging with the guy, and she knows from across the world, you know?
I know. I was going to say, I mean, I was just about to say, now that you said that, it's going to make me sound kind of stupid when I say this, but none of the characters on the show are really stupid. And they're not. I don't think, I mean, Lance just really hasn't been presented with a good opportunity, you know, a nice stress-free opportunity to kind of realize it. There have been some photos floating around that Oliver may actually be switching from the airbrush makeup to an actual domino mask, like a physical mask that he wears, which would make sense.
I have missed those.
It was from like a behind-the-scenes video, I think. Someone posted or something else. I saw it on greenarrowtv.com, which is run by the people who run K-Site, which is the Krypton site of Superman. Smallville website that was originally out, and they are taking care of supporting other superhero shows and stuff now.
Well, that is definitely the first place I'm going to check here when we're done. But
yeah,
so did you see it then? Was it very clear?
Yeah, I mean, it's you can see that he's wearing a physical mask, like, and it looks very much like Canaries. So you know, maybe it's a League of Assassins, gear that he picked up from somebody.
So what? How did it look? Did it look good? I mean,
right now he's kind of got that Blade Runner look where, you know, Pris just kind of spray paints her eyes with the, you know, the paint. Cause it's kind of just, you know, that sloppy green, which is good enough. You know, it hides his face. It allows his eyes to blend into the shadow from his hood. This provides that extra protection where should his hood be blown back, which it never is, right? But that could happen. I mean, you know, it's the domino mask. It looks like, you know, a Robin mask, and you know, but it looks like the typical Green Arrow, Oliver Queen, you know, mask that we see from, you know, the 70s on. So
yeah,
it's cool.
I've always kind of dug that mask. I've always thought it looked kind of cool when you put it on superheroes and in comics and stuff. But I always wonder how it stayed on.
Spirit gum.
Spirit gum, okay.
Yeah.
It takes some time to put some spirit gum on and just kind of push it on until it sticks and then go save the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
But you can actually see his eyes. It's not, you know, the white out eyeball look. So they're going for, you know, a realistic sort of thing. Though I think it would be kind of cool to have a little white screen over it that, you know, kind of obscures the eyes. But, of course, you know, especially as an archer, who's your eyesight is probably your second most important attribute, you don't really want to interfere with that, you know, if you're firing arrows and stuff around at people.
Yeah.
So, one other thing while we're talking about Canary, and I had brought up Huntress. Are you familiar with, it was originally a comic book series, but there was also a TV show, I think on the WB that lasted.
Oh, like Birds of Prey?
Birds of Prey, right.
Yeah, I knew exactly what you're talking about.
It lasted about a season, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
I think it was only one season. So Birds of Prey is a spinoff of kind of the Batman universe, and it features Black Canary, the Huntress, and Oracle. Oracle being Barbara Gordon after she was confined to a wheelchair. I believe that comes from the result of the Joker shooting her in the Killing Joke comic from the late 80s. So they formed a team called Birds of Prey, and they worked out of a clock tower. Now, we mentioned that there was this clock tower where the Canary is hanging out, which just happens to be kind of a coincidence, according to the producers of the show. For some reason, I don't necessarily believe in the coincidences they talk about on the show, because they are, and maybe it's subconscious. Maybe they were just like, oh, we should, you know, do this clock tower because it looks cool and it provides them with some interesting, an interesting set. But maybe subconsciously, they are planning to do a Birds of Prey reunion. So we've already seen the Huntress. We've already seen Canary. But we haven't seen Barbara Gordon. But Oracle, the character of Oracle, is a computer genius. I wonder who else is a computer genius.
Oh, I know. I know this one.
Who's that? Josh?
Felicity.
Yeah.
Definitely not me. Felicity.
So, I was just kind of pondering that this week.
You know, that would be, I mean, I could see them doing an episode of those three working together on something.
And the episode would be called Women Who Kick Ass. Because
sure,
because no woman should suffer under the hands of a man.
It would be a good episode. I think they could do a really good job on it, and it would work. I mean, it would fit really well. They'd have to, you know, figure out a way to bring the Huntress back. I that would be the hardest part of that, I think. I don't think
she did not seem like she was any kind of mood to come back to see Sterling City or Ollie or anybody.
No, or work with anybody right. in any cooperative way. But
right.
But it could be a really good a good little. I wouldn't want them to do a whole spinoff series.
And, no,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
they've already done that, and I don't think it had worked too well.
Wasn't too bad of a show.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, I think that's like half the fun of the. Well, maybe 33% of the fun of these episodes is just sitting there going, "Oh, I like this little setup. They tease this name. Oh, that means that." They could do this or that or tell this storyline or bring these heroes in because, like we talked about, you know, they're partway on the road to getting a Suicide Squad together for the show. And now they could potentially do a Birds of Prey reunion. You know, they could they're bringing the Flash on. They could have a potential Justice League, you know, show up at some point. Who knows? I mean, all sorts of cool ideas that could stem from this.
Well, that's the kind of cool thing about the way they're doing is they're putting little tiny snippets of things here and there that could potentially be really great storylines. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to go back to them. They don't have to use them, but they're always there. And they're always kind of in the past episodes where they can connect that with something else that's going on.
Well, that's the good thing that the writers are doing that, you know, they're kind of seeding the playing field for any potential things they want to do coming up. So, because it's always hard just to introduce something without having, you know, given the seed that it's possible to do this. One of the things that they've been teasing now on two of the episodes is this particle accelerator. This episode made a mention of the particle accelerator, which appears to be having some, protests. Held against it, according to the TV news in the background in this episode. Some people were arrested protesting the particle accelerator, which is still due to be turned on in the beginning of December. So I guess we will probably around episode 8, I'm guessing we will get to see that take place. So, but little things like that, you know, that allow them to just come back later, like you said, and, you know, pick up a thread from this storyline and a thread from that storyline and kind of weave something new out of it. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, me too.
Well, one of the other things that we like doing on the show is looking literally and kind of figuratively at the titles of the episodes. They are not, you know, silly titles. They are not titles that are just descriptive, like, you know, The Woman in Black or something like that. They tend to have multiple meanings.
Like an old Friends episode.
Right. The one
where Black Canary tells Oliver she's Sarah.
Yeah. That would be funny to have him do that.
Funny, actually.
but we like taking a look at the episode names and how it relates to everything like that. And Josh, you did a little research on what exactly is a crucible. I think the only other time I really have heard crucible would probably be in like middle school when I was reading the story called The Crucible, which
Arthur Miller.
Yes. Story? Arthur Miller. Yes. I was not really paying attention. It was about the Salem witch trials, I believe, or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Play.
Yeah. It's a classic piece of literature.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
But, I had to kind of go back and remind myself, exactly what Crucible meant. I mean, it pops up as titles of different storylines all over the place, and it was even, as you pointed out, it was a Star Wars novel named Crucible, and my favorite Star Wars comic ever that I even illustrated and had Mark Hamill sign.
Star Wars number 18.
So a crucible, the meaning of the word crucible, there's several meanings. One of them is a severe test. Okay, and then another one is a place or situation in which concentrated forces interact to cause or influence change or development. And those two definitions, to me, really fit a lot of the different threads going through this episode.
I like that. I mean, yeah, number one is kind of that overt meaning, a severe test. You can see the severe test that everybody had here in all the different storylines. But that I like that second one, a place or situation in which concentrated forces interact to cause or influence change or development.
And we saw that big time with so many of the characters in this episode. You know, one, I guess I'm pointing out this one first because it's kind of it's separate from the present day storyline, you know, because it's in a flashback. But Oliver, when he's on this boat in this magic large warehouse on the boat, you know, he's confronted by the captain, and he tries to, you know, you got to hand it to him. I mean, he's in a really bad situation here, and with no hope of escape or any signs that anybody even knows he's there. Mm-hmm. And he stands up to this guy.
Well, I mean, the guy comes in and says, "You have two choices. Either you tell me what I want and I kill you, or I torture you. You tell me what I want and then I kill you." I mean, it's okay. You're going to kill me either way. Piss off. You know, I'm not going to tell you anything. I mean, he's had a, look at it this way. He's had a hard year. And that's an understatement.
That sounds like the subtitle to the first season, The Hard Year. He has had a hard year, I guess. I guess when you're backed into a corner and you don't see any hope, so you might as well go out strong. So
right. I mean, and you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I don't know how I would behave in a situation like this. You'd like to think, oh yeah, you know, I could do that, you know. The guy tells me this, I'm going to say, yeah, stick it in your face, you know.
Isn't that funny? That's the very first thing I thought of, and it really only took me about a half a second to go, oh, no. I'd have been like, yeah, come on. I'll show you where they were. They're right over here.
Yeah.
I mean, can I go now? Because please. So I can see this situation. Well, so the guy, he says, you know, he tells him to go to hell, and the guy says, we're already there.
Yeah.
And he shoots him. Shoots him right in the gut there, right in the side, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's not a
it's not like an immediate life wound, right?
Yeah, not an immediate life threatening injury. You know, something that you could bleed to death from. Right?
Yeah, and the bullet was stuck in him, so it's not like it wasn't like a graze across his left side, but it was in his side enough that probably, you know, missed his stomach, but it's in. Whatever, you know, in the muscle or whatever there on your side.
Uh-huh. And purposefully.
Yeah.
That's exactly where he wanted to shoot him.
Ugh.
So, oh, man. Yeah, that was a tough scene to watch, but like, it's kind of cool. It kind of made you, you know, cheer for Oliver even that much more, you know,
because
you can see how he's growing to be such a, just a hard, fearless person, you know. Because I still, even after season one, even after everything from season one, he still kind of seems like that spoiled rich little white kid, you know, a little less arrogant, but still kind of wimpy, you know. Some of it's the hair, but also he changes his voice. It is. Some of it's the hair. But he changes his voice. If you listen, his voice is much different when he's talking in the flashbacks.
Oh, it's much, yeah, it's kind of... It's more upbeat, kind of. It's a little higher pitched.
It's little boys. It's like a little boy. You know, not a little boy, but like a young, man.
Yeah, he's trying to do a younger voice. He's trying to do kind of maybe a college kid or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's great. No, I mean, I don't. It's not to be dismissive of it. I think it's purposeful, and again, I think it's one of those things. It's subtle enough that you don't notice it, but. It fits with, like you said, it fits with the hair. It fits with kind of the personality he's had. So it portrays that character change that – so when we jump back, you don't even have to know that it's really a flashback. You go, oh, he's got this hair and stuff like this. Obviously, this happened earlier. Like it's just – it's a great acting job that Steven does to help portray to people that, you know, this is not – the same character that we're seeing in the other scene.
For sure.
Because imagine someone just coming in, like my mom coming over and watching the, oh, what's he doing? Well, where'd the island come? Why aren't they there? So.
Is she doing that again? She just calls you up and, hey, I was watching. Actually, my dad does that. He calls me up and asks me questions about the episode. So
that's great. Fun, I think actually. That's cool. Yeah. At some point, I'm going to start calling. Like, I can see myself in like 30 years calling my kids up and it's like, did you see that? Wait, that was awesome. Oh, my God. I can't believe Wolverine did that. I'm sorry. I thought this was my son.
But then you'll have to listen to their podcast and see if they make fun of you on that.
Right. would that it were true.
So he has to dig this bullet. They give him the medical equipment to dig this bullet out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he finds out that it's a test. And then ultimately at the end is
in Russia, a bullet shoots you. So yeah, he gets the advice from the wizened Russian dude in the jail cell next to him, which I've got information on later too. We'll cover that in our references.
Who is not actually played by Yakov Smirnoff?
I love this America.
Now I kind of wish he was. But at the end, he when he finds out that it's Sarah that's on this boat, which we still know nothing about. That was just sort of the...
With a big knife, by the way, man. Did you see the size of the knife she's carrying? This is going to be a joke here, but, I mean, it's Crocodile Dundee-sized. I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's a good 8-inch... I might even call it I guess it's a knife. Hunting knife, I guess, would be like...
Well, she's had a whole year to kind of work up to the big knife, so...
Well, here we go. Here we get some more scars, I'm guessing.
Oh, geez.
Because we still don't know where he gets all those scars. Oh. I mean, there's more. So.
Oh, man. That you just put some images in my head. Like, how dark and twisted would that be if she's one of the people that gave... No wonder he wouldn't tell her family.
I mean,
that makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, see, I'm guessing that... Yeah, let's put this together. Because I'm guessing that what's going to happen here is she's going to torture him. That's her test, right? She maybe needs to pass a test for her final test to get into the League of Assassins or something like that. And let's go this far. She's going to have to kill him. They are the League of Assassins, not the League of Mortal Wounded people. So she, quote, kills him and then ditches the body. And, of course, he will survive, but he will be totally, totally messed up and drift back to the island or whatever. And then she'll be able to, you know, she's won her place with the League of Assassins or something like that. Because, right, in Batman Begins, wasn't that sort of like, didn't Bruce have to kill that villager that was brought in? He was, like, supposed to assassinate him because the guy stole a bag of rice or something like that?
Yeah.
So.
I think so. Yeah, you're playing this. It's like I'm watching the next episode. You're playing it all out. I really like where this is going. But yeah, that. So you made the point that seemed like a test, like Crucible, right? And it's also where all these things are kind of coming together that are going to change. This is like the next big step into where he's going and where she's going. This is going to turn her ultimately into Black Canary. So that seemed like a big Crucible. I guess that's exactly what it was.
Exactly.
So that in the flashback, that seemed like not important, but I mean this particular flashback, I think, has been the biggest, I guess, the most important part of the storyline so far this season.
Okay. Yeah. I mean this for I think for the entire episode though. I mean this is a very crucial episode, again, fourth episode in, but this is very crucial for setting up, if not the arc for the minor arc for the first half of the season, definitely elements for the major arc for the rest of this season. You've got the whole setup with, who is this mysterious woman? Why is she back? What does she want? Well, we're not quite sure, but we've started on that arc. Then you've got the whole stuff with Sebastian Blood, and you know he's continuing doing his alderman stuff, right? You see him, kind of being a jerk to Oliver again. I love his line where it's like, "When you say you're going to show up, you aren't there, and when you're asked to stay away, here you are." It's like, boy, you just are a real prick. But I think, you know, that's the point. But then, you know, we get that ending in the flashback and you're like, oh, that's a great end for the episode, right? Tease us with the flashback. But no, they come back and they do the whole scene with Brother Blood to actually show you who this guy is, which, I think readers of comics, you know, had some sense about this when we first saw him, the fact that he's kind of this cult leader, right? He's got this whole underground, literally, I'm guessing, underground group, which includes the creepy policeman who pulls over Laurel. I'm like, I was waiting for that guy to, like, shoot Laurel or something when she got pulled over in the car. Did you feel that
they were going to? Yeah, I thought he was going to kidnap her.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on, but it was just like, you know, the way they lit it or something. He was, you know, kind of in shadow, and you know, you see, you hear those things where it's like, you know, the person pretending to be the policeman, you know, pulls over the woman and, you know, assaults her in some fashion. Or conversely, I thought maybe Canary was going to step in and, you know, help out at that point as well. But yeah, you've got Brother Blood setting up his own sort of crucible for, I guess, people to join his group. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think he wants something specific. I think he's looking for a certain kind of person to do like a big task. I don't know what that stuff was that they injected him with. Do you know? Do you have an idea?
I have an idea. So it looked green to me. Which,
yeah, I thought so too.
There's only one green fluid we've seen on the show so far, and that is vertigo.
That was my first thought too.
So he's injecting people with vertigo, but to what end? But then the, you know, severe reaction that the mayor had to
severe reaction.
Dude was bleeding out
those
his
commercials.
Eyeballs.
Well, discontinue use immediately if you pass over dead and your eyes start bleeding.
it's a lot worse than anal leakage. So.
Well, I don't have a lot, but it is,
I mean,
worse.
What, you know, it took, what, 10 seconds for this guy to die and start bleeding out of his eyeballs?
Yes.
That's not the vertigo, if it is vertigo or some derivation of that. But, you know, I mean, then I'm thinking, okay, it's like Venom, right? Quote, Venom, the stuff that gives Bane his powers.
I hope it's not Venom.
I hope it's not Venom, too. Because if I have any reservations problems with things that they're doing on the show, too many Batman villains, and too many Batman kind of subplots and terminologies and stuff like that. Only because, and I think they're doing it because Batman is probably the one hero that has the most non-superpowered villains that he fights, right? Because he doesn't have superpowers, so he has to fight non-superpowered villains. Whereas Arrow is kind of a crossover character because he has the bow and arrow, so he can fight metahumans to some degree because he's got a long-range weapon and all that.
And he spent a lot of time with Green Lantern.
Right.
So, you know, consequently, there was a lot of other, you know, metahuman villains too. But
yeah. So, but
yeah, so I hope
that,
it's not,
I don't know,
not Venom, but he, you know, he said something about he was looking for somebody strong enough.
Right. Well, I'm wondering if the police officer, right, has been through this test, right? Someone who's strong enough to survive whatever this injection is, and then you can become part of my team, you know, and is that like the police, like, why is the police officer there, Officer Daly, I believe his name was, how was he vetted to be part of, you know, so that makes me think.
That's why I think it's maybe not everybody in his brotherhood.
Yes, true, true.
I'm thinking maybe he's looking for somebody specific to do something to, you know, maybe it's a thing where they inject him and they're not invincible or they're not ultra strong, but maybe they don't feel it as much if you hurt them or shoot them or, you know, something.
Well, how
like
about
that.
This?
Something.
If you get injected with this stuff and it doesn't react to in you, like it's just inert, right? It, your body doesn't reject it in the way that the mayor's body did, right? So it kills him, whatever that reaction is. If it doesn't do that, okay, you're fit to be on my team because I'm going to release this into the water. I'm going to release this into the glades. I'm going to release this into Starling City, whatever. And anybody who is not, you know, destined, quote unquote, to be with me is going to die, right? So that's how he's testing his team. Oh, I don't know.
Ooh. Hmm. Yeah, it was creepy. I'm wondering where he's going to go. And what'd you think of his mask?
I like the mask. My first thought was, holy crap, they got the Scarecrow on here? Because they had I couldn't quite, my TV's too dark, I think. I couldn't quite make out the mask. When I watched it again, I like cranked up the brightness.
But well, it was similar because it was a similar color, but yes. Then it was also longer than his face, you know, kind of like the Scarecrow's
yep.
Bag or, you know, whatever it is. I mean,
right.
Burlap.
The sack.
Sack.
Yeah. But the Brother Blood, he had the kind of bones coming off from the chin line or from the jawline, I guess. And that's cool because when Marv Wolfman and George Perez George Perez's art for Brother Blood when he debuted, he's got kind of a three-quarter mask. It exposes his mouth area, but it looks like it's made out of bone, and there are some little horn things that come off the mask. So it's very derivative of the original design, yet more, quote, real world for it. So that's cool. That was very neat.
That was good and creepy.
Yep. And then I think the other Crucible thing that we've got here is, which we don't know necessarily where it's going, is Laurel's depression. She is, man, this woman, three episodes now, she's gone from one spectrum to a breakdown to the entire opposite side, I think. She's sitting into an AA meeting.
As the character storyline, it worked pretty well connecting it with, you know, her dad's, I guess supposed alcoholism after Sarah had died, and it worked pretty well. But man, Laurel's just kind of an up and down character. I just still don't really know where she's going. But
well, if what we talked about last week, if it's going in the direction of she ends up finding out that this female vigilante is Sarah, and then Sarah dies, or Sarah dies and then she finds out that, oh my God, that was Sarah, and she's dead. Now she's really dead, and decides to take. I don't see how like that's necessarily going to connect because Laurel is just, she's a mess. But maybe that's the whole point. They're going to take her character down to such a low point that you know, she has nowhere to go but up, and is going to get, you know, rebuilt, you know, stronger. You know, kind of again, kind of like Bruce Wayne. You know, took himself to wherever, Tibet to, you know, break himself down to build himself back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we fall down, Master Bruce? You know, so we can get back up.
Yeah, well, she'll have a long way to climb up if she keeps going the way she's going. But
right.
But
well, and we talked about this a little bit earlier. But what do you think? Why do you think just jumping back to the flashback here for a second? Why do you think the boat crew is looking for this island and these bodies? I mean, they're really hell-bent to get these things for some reason.
I did not see any more evidence to give me any ideas about that. I'm not sure what exactly they're looking for.
I'm wondering if it's like something simple like hidden treasure, it could be some kind of, you know, maybe there's a special element, you know, mineral or something on the island.
Or something. Whatever reason they were there, you know, maybe they had.
Oh, these Japanese soldiers.
The Japanese soldiers. Yeah, maybe they had some sort of a weapon or something that
right.
is powerful enough to give you something that will help you against your enemies or, you know, whatever. And they know that these soldiers had it and that they're looking for it. That's the only thing I can really think of, which is kind of like a hidden treasure, but
yeah. Well, I mean, the thing that I also didn't put together really last week was, though, these are Japanese soldiers, but it's a Chinese island. So that's that's interesting.
So, and they're being looked for by Haitians.
Yeah. So I don't know. And then you had a thing here that's interesting because we got a little bit more of Summer Glau in this episode. I think this is the first time we've seen her since the premiere, correct? Or was she in episode two?
No, I think she was in episode two.
Okay. But basically, Oliver is doing this Cash for Guns program, which by all accounts is doing very well, but he didn't want to publicize that it was him that was behind it. Summer Glau's character, Isabel, wouldn't allow money from the company from, as they called it, QC throughout the episode here or there, abbreviating Queen Consolidated, just due to the fact that, you know, they just are, the company's not doing very well, so, but they don't have that kind of money. You were asking, where's Oliver getting his money?
Yeah, I mean, she wouldn't let him use the company's money, and he said, well, you know, I'll pay for it myself, and she explained to him why he couldn't do that, and he did it anyway, so I'm just wondering where he is getting this money.
Because didn't she say something about his trust fund, like not covering it or something? Right?
Yeah, but, I mean, you know he's got some. I mean, he's got to have some to fund his superhero business that he's got going there because, yeah. I mean, it's no holds barred there. But it made me think of a deleted scene from season one. I don't know if we talked about this when we reviewed the DVD collection there, but mm-hmm. there's a deleted scene of him and Diggle going to the bank and to get some money for something. I can't remember which episode it was, but
okay. No, I don't think we talked about this one.
He walks in their private vault or whatever it was, mm-hmm. safety deposit room, and there's just stacks of money. I mean, it's just and Diggle's kind of looking around going, whoa. You just can come in here and get money whenever you want. And Oliver was just like, yeah, grab a bag. So I'm wondering if, I mean, he must just have stuff laying around, you know, but now.
Well, he may have a stash that, you know, Isabel doesn't know about. I mean, he's got all these connections to this Russian mafia that we saw in season one as well. So,
yeah. So I don't know where he's getting that. Now, if it follows certain storylines that have gone on in throughout history of Green Arrow, he's lost his money at certain points mm-hmm. in comic history. I mean, he's
well, in some history he's lost it. In other retellings, he actually gave it up.
Right.
Because he wanted to, you know, just live with the common man kind of thing, which is part of his whole social justice arc and stuff that would go on through his issues. So
I was just curious where he was getting it. They didn't really,
I don't know.
Ever explain that, but not that it's that important, but
I didn't lead the episode with that. Cause you know, it's, I don't know.
The episode wasn't Oliver's stock portfolio.
Right.
That was not the title this time.
Right. Liquidation is going to be the name of one of the episodes. So let's, we are running real short on time here. So I kind of want to go through some of these references. Most of them are just minor things. Some we've already talked about, but found this interesting. When Laurel gets pulled over, you can see her license plate pretty clearly on the top of the license plate. The quote, the slogan, the tagline. What do you call those? The motto, I guess.
Yeah, it's a motto.
Yeah, it's like a state motto. It says "Land of Mist," which is not any it's not any state. In the United States, it's actually not an actual license plate, but it appears to be the license plates that for TV shows that shoot in Vancouver, it's the fake license plates and the tag name that they put on them to shoot up there when they're filming around town. That's as near as I could figure. Now, funny thing was, I was trying to help decipher this with my son, so I paused it up on the screen, and it's kind of blurry, but he ran right up to it and was looking at it, you know, like 6 inches away, you know, so it was just, I'm sure all he could see was pixels, and he's like, "Land of Meat." I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure it does not say Land of Meat. Let's step back and look at it from further away, because it may become clearer. So that's when we deciphered it to say Land of Mist.
Big cattle industry in Starling City.
Well, and yeah, Land of Mist, it's like, okay, so where is Starling City then anyway? It's like Springfield. We just never know where it is, like in The Simpsons, right? We're never going to really know where.
It's very humid there. Very humid, I know that.
Yeah. Then the place that the mayor was getting his guns from was called Camp Kirby, which is named after Jack Kirby, a writer and artist who is probably most notable for helping co-create the Fantastic Four and the Avengers and Thor and Captain America with Stan Lee in the 60s. But he had also done some work on Green Arrow. I think during one of our summer specials, I talked about his the Green Arrow collection of omnibus, I guess, of his work on the series, which is, it's kind of goofy, but you know, it's also from the 1950s.
I liked it though. It was fun to read. That was a fun collection.
Yeah, I mean, his stuff is great. He is one of these like amazing creative artists. I mean, he would end up doing like, I'm going to exaggerate here, but not by much. He would do like 100 pages a month or something like that for different comics, and he could just put out so much different art, and continued working up until his death in the early 90s. So,
well, and back then, especially on Green Arrow, he had some really innovative ideas for the story where he took the character too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what's interesting too is that he had actually served in World War II. So he had written the original Captain America comics, and then I think gone off and served some time in war, and then came back and like reworked on Captain America again in the 60s when Marvel recreated the character. And you know, he also wrote some other war comics, The Losers and some Sergeant Rock and Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos. So I thought it was kind of cool that they named a military base after him in this. Let's see. Lila Michaels was in this episode. She was Diggle's, I guess, ex-partner from last season. And
she checks, future girlfriend.
Yeah, she checks the box marked single. So I guess we'll see her some more. The particle accelerator was mentioned again, as I mentioned. Sarah was wearing a Starling City Rockets cap when she was visiting Sin at the hospital. You could see the photo of her in this hat, or the person that was assumed to be her that was photographed in China from last season when Sarah's mom came on the show, Dinah, and was trying to convince Laurel and Quentin that the daughter was still alive. And then it turned out that it was just some other girl that Laurel, you know, brought over and introduced to them, someone that she used to know or something like that. But maybe they were mistaken. Maybe they actually did take a picture of Sarah in China, and then this other girl was set up as a ruse or something like that, just to continue to fool Laurel and Quentin and Dinah to make them think that Sarah is still dead. The captain of the Amazo, the Haitian, he was played by Jimmy Jean-Louis, who is the Haitian character from Heroes, the superhero show. So that was kind of cool to see him. He doesn't appear to have any kind of powers here, but he played a character that could dampen a superpower when he was in near contact with a character there. And then the this is being reported online. The character of the Russian in the cell next to Oliver, who is not named, he's actually credited as the Russian. I was trying to find out before we did the show here if Stephen Amell or if one of the producers maybe tweeted this, like Mark Guggenheim might have tweeted this, but I couldn't find the original source. But people online are saying that that is Anatoly, Anatoly Niyazev, a.k.a. the KG Beast. And this was a character that was not seen, but he was mentioned in the Vertigo episode from season 1, episode 12, as the leader of the Soyensivanskaya Bratva, which is the Russian mob group that Oliver met with in that episode. The line from that episode is the Russian that he's meeting with to get, I can't remember, what they were trying to buy Vertigo, I guess, or set up a meeting with the Count, I think.
Yeah,
and the Russian
was trying to catch him.
Yeah, and the Russian said Anatoly Niyazev, whatever. He speaks very highly of you, and Oliver says he should. I saved his life. So, if that's the line from season one, seeing that this guy is, you know, basically he's helping save Oliver's life in this episode by saying, you know, you got shot. It's just a way to see how strong you are. If you survive and are able to take the bullet out and fix yourself, you know, you're strong enough to survive, which I'm now kind of putting together. It's the same thing that Brother Blood is doing to his people, right? Just seeing if they're strong enough to survive in some fashion.
Ooh, yeah.
But obviously, at some point, Oliver, you know, returns the favor, I would guess. So we'll see where that goes. So all in all, a real jam-packed episode. Lots of cool stuff going on.
Yeah. A lot of different places it's going to go. I'm excited.
Yep, and I'm really excited to. I mean, I keep saying this. It's like the episode excites me so much, and then I see the preview, and I'm even more excited for the next episode, which is, I'm sure, what they want. I'm glad we do the show because it gives me a chance to kind of reflect a little bit more, and you know, just take the time to think about what's going on instead of just being hyped for what's coming. You know, enjoy what we've got instead of, you know, always looking forward to what we don't have. So. And I enjoy the time.
I do too.
Well, thanks for saying that. Anyway, that's all that we have for this week's episode of Green Justice.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We're having a great time doing it. Make sure you guys leave us feedback on iTunes. We love seeing good positive feedback about the show. And you can also contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Make sure you send in those names for what you think the Arrow fans should be called. I want to hear some good creative ones. And also, you can tweet us at Green Justice Pod, and you can visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
Yeah, swing over to Facebook and check out those comparison photos that I put together of Sarah from episode 1 and Sarah from this week's episode of Crucible. You can also check out the other show that Josh and I do called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is about the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. television show on ABC. And you can find that via randomchatter.com. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to tell all your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.